You guys, today on the podcast, we have an amazing woman, mother, fitness model, and triathlete, Angie Green Fletcher. We're talking about working out. We're talking about social media.
Speaking of social media, can everyone please get on iTunes and leave a comment? It's like our equivalent of a tip jar. Tell us how much you love us. We appreciate it. Listen up. It's a great episode. Let's go.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm so good. How are you? This is Ellie Noss and Bianca Kylik with Atomic Moms.
I feel kind of ridiculous because everyone's been making fun of me walking around with this gallon of alkaline water.
It looks like you're a bodybuilder.
Which I am not. But I have to say
– I'm glad you clarified that for
just in case anyone was curious, I'm not. I have to say that drinking water out of a gallon receptacle, it makes you very aware of how much you're drinking, which, you know, I always find that like halfway through the day, I'm like, how much water did I drink today? And then, yesterday I started having heart palpitations.
Why?
So, well,
because the jug was so heavy that you're looking around. You are really losing it. This is good.
I've been going to see a new acupuncturist who's been helping me try to get off my Synthroid and have natural thyroid support. And part of that was that not for everybody, but for me, alkaline water seems to be a good thing.
And alkaline water for me is not a good thing, he said.
Yeah.
So
everybody
out
so
there.
Here's how it works. I go see a doctor that I love or a guru or a somebody or other. Mm-hmm. And then all my friends go after. Mm-hmm. And so Ellie is now seeing our famous Dr. Kim.
And what's really ridiculous, but our listeners would probably understand that everything that's good for Bianca is bad for me and everything that's good for me is bad for Bianca, which proves our yin-yang theory.
Yeah, it's true. It's good. What's going on with you? Out.
Well, last week's episode was about spring cleaning.
Yeah.
And I took it to heart and I unloaded like 7 bags of crap.
You sent me a picture.
It was ridiculous.
We have to put these up on Facebook, by the way.
Yes, we do.
We will. We will have by
so
the point.
So it is officially life-changing.
It is life-changing.
And my husband got really excited about it. He did it too because he started seeing all the bags going to the trunk of the car and he got super psyched. And then he's like, well, this is us like making room for baby, right? And I was like, no, but sure, if that motivates you. We even moved around the bed so we could have more light. This is life-changing.
Can I tell you what it's changed for me, which is the biggest thing because the one area of my life in which I have the worst problem, which is shopping. What it's changed for me now is when I go to the store, I'm like, okay, first of all, I don't want to go through that again of removing clothes that have still price tags on them. And so that made me feel really like guilty when I was throwing out stuff that actually had price tags on it. And now I can see what's in my closet because there's only like 10 things. And I don't want to add things that aren't going to be flexible with other stuff.
Yeah, and it's so, such a time saver too.
Yes.
Because you know what you have and you know where
yes.
it is. So that really helps. Also, so the book that we were talking about last week, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo. I mean, now it's everywhere. My friend just sent a link to me about the book with Martha Stewart's Living or whatever. So it's everywhere. In that book, they say cut the tags off stuff because once you take possession of it and you get rid of the tags, you're more likely to use it.
Oh.
It's when you hold on to it and it still has the tags on it, it doesn't feel like it's yours.
I clearly do not remember that part of the book.
Yeah. Well, you might be a little bit of a skimmer.
I am a skimmer. but that reminds me of our guest today because she could probably give us a lesson or two about purging.
Okay. We are not editing that because that was the most brilliant, insane, horrible thing ever.
But Jen Roban was talking in the podcast
so last
about
week,
purging.
So let people yes. know. Okay, so last week, Jen, who was our guest, who's a professional organizer, she used the word purge like 17 times.
I know. And it got stuck in my brain.
Yeah, and it got stuck in Bianca's brain because today, what are we talking about? Fitness and health with a former model.
Yes.
So, Bianca, what did you just get into?
Well, no, let me explain. So our guest is Angie Green Fletcher, who is a friend of mine, but also she is a fitness model. She is a mom. She is a triathlete. And she's an incredible person to follow on Instagram because she's so inspiring. And one of her posts, getting to where the purging fell in, was about getting rid of all of her belongings, like 95% of her belongings, which was very inspiring to me. And this started the whole ball rolling of Jen coming in and doing my house. And so –
so Angie's post got you motivated to start clearing out with our last week's guest, Jen.
Yes, yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
I purged a lot of my workout clothes this past week because they were so ratty. I mentioned on the podcast that I was going to go home and do it, and I did it, and it was great because I got to tell you, every time I would pull out something, I'd be like, even if it was Lululemon or something that I felt like I should keep because it was expensive or nice, like it was always going to be my last pick. And so it just would never get chosen. So it felt so good to give that away.
Well, not only that, the whole idea of like your workout – because I called Jen actually when I was cleaning out the closet. And I said, what about workout clothes? Because the idea that Marie Kondo says in her book is that every item in your house should bring you joy. So – when I was going through my clothes, I'm like, but what about like workout clothes? Like, I mean, whose workout clothes bring them joy? And Jen said, but they should. And I was like, that kind of like is game changer for me, because when I then selected a few items that I really did feel good in, I was like, okay, I'm going to the gym. I'm putting this stuff on. Like, I feel good. You know, it's like I was grabbing ratty old tank tops that made me feel like crap anyway. So it's like I was already going in a bad mind frame when I was going to the gym. Yeah, so it's like when you look at everything that way, it is a game changer.
I love it.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah,
after our Palm Springs getaway, which was such a fun episode, I think, our little spring break episode, Mom's Gone Wild, if you want to look it up. 2 days later, I got an audition where I had to be in a bikini. And then I got the call back because I had my – birthday Bianca base tan. So I was working that whole weekend. We did the podcast and I got my tan. So I got the call back. I didn't get the job and I don't know who fucking got the job, but it's okay.
You know, it's a process. It's also a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. But you know what? My number should be coming up about now. It still hasn't. It's fine.
Let's get Angie on the show.
Let's do it.
Back with a really special guest, and I am I'm really excited for you guys to hear this young lady talk about her deal in life, in love, in workouts. Mm-hmm. It's my friend Angie Green Fletcher. Welcome to the Atomic Mom Show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you. I'm so glad we got you in. We tried to do Angie a little while ago, and it didn't work out for some reason. You were in New York.
I was in New York.
Yeah.
You couldn't do me. I was in New York.
Yeah. But here you are, and it's great to have you here. Angie has an 11-and-a-half-year-old boy, Oliver, and just recently got married.
I know, for the second time.
Yep. And so Angie and I have mutual friends, which is how we initially met. But I feel like, as is the case with people these days, I really got to know Angie through Instagram. And she has such an amazing, inspiring Instagram account for all you mamas out there.
It's still Angie Green, which is my first married name. And only because I haven't known how to switch. Like, I've been switch everywhere on Facebook, and I can't switch the actual name.
Right. The handle on Instagram.
Really?
We'll figure it out.
Listen, my sister changes hers weekly, so I'll find out for you.
Okay. So right now it is Angie Green. And I think that's just, I don't know. It's like that's how my SAG name is still Angie Green. Because if I switched that up.
Yeah.
I have a million
questions for you.
Uh-oh.
Because you say SAG and I have a million questions. So
Okay. Go.
Fire. Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
You are a model.
I am.
You are a model.
Right? I am and was. Yeah. That was my
Well, are you doing fashion modeling? You started with fashion modeling?
Yeah. I left the house when I was 18 on my 18th birthday and flew over to Germany. And it was from then on. That's what I've been doing mainly.
And when did you start doing fitness modeling?
Well, I think it went hand in hand. No, actually. I started off doing a lot of fashion, a lot of catalog, a lot of European, German stuff. And probably more fashion when I moved to New York. I got married at 19 and moved to New York. And
as she makes a face.
As I cringe, because I don't recommend it to anyone. Don't get married.
But it's your story, yeah. You know.
That was Mr. Green?
Yes. Okay. That was Mr. Green that I got married to. And had my lovely baby boy in New York. And then.
So how old were you when you became a mother?
I was 23, 24. Because okay. He's 11 and a half now, which makes me 36 and a half.
Were you nervous as a model to become pregnant? Were you afraid it was going to take you out of the game?
No, not at all. Because modeling was never my end all be all. Being a mom was, I grew up with kids. I grew up in the church. I grew up babysitting, nannying, being in the nursery, like in the choir. That was my life. Modeling was a full side job, like little adventure trip. But I always knew I wanted four kids. I was going to be married. I was going to be a missionary. Like that was my existence and my goal and my passion. So being a model was just like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to get pregnant. And I actually made more money being a pregnant model than I did in the first half of my career.
Really?
They pay pregnant models a lot of money. And you literally
I'm gonna
work
go get pregnant again.
Yeah. You work half the time. Like I did this job in Philadelphia back in the day where I made the highest day rate I've ever made in all of my modeling. I did one shot in the morning. And then they were like, okay, so we're going to rest, do like a 2.5 hour lunch. Just put your feet up. Meanwhile, I was like 3.5 months pregnant and they put a fake belly on top of my belly. And then we did one shot in the afternoon and I took the train back home to New York and was like, this is amazing.
I think this is why a lot of women miss being pregnant, because everybody treats you so well when you are pregnant. You get the, you know, mm-hmm. white kid gloves treatment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you work out while you were pregnant?
I did. You know, I didn't work out a lot even before I was modeling. Like I was never on any basketball teams, volleyball teams. I was never that kind of an athlete in high school. And I went to Bible college. I never went to any other college. So we weren't working out there. and I really started working out when I started modeling, but nothing like I do now. I mean, I would go for a run and I had no idea what being fit or healthy was. I didn't eat as much as I should. And I did way more cardio than is ever necessary for any human being to do. And so I did work out during my pregnancy. I was 10 days overdue, and I remember walking Central Park on August 1st in like the crazy heat of summer and being crazy miserable. And then I had him on August 3rd.
And you had a home birth? Is that right?
I did, essentially. I mean, you could call it a home birth. He was in a birthing center in New York because I wasn't allowed to have him in my apartment.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that part of the contract? No cats and no birthing babies.
I know. Well, no, I forget, even it was so long ago, I forget why, but my midwife said, we're not going to do it in your apartment. I don't know. Maybe it's because we were on the 37th floor and just emergency wise, like, you know, if the elevator broke, I'd be like,
point.
You know, walking down 37 flights of stairs.
So right.
I had him in the St. Luke's Roosevelt Birthing Center. Awesome. And it was amazing.
I feel like a few weeks before I was going to give birth, I would have moved into a hotel. Like the idea of even doing 34 flights after your water breaks.
No, I know.
Seems exciting.
Well, because I labored at home. I labored at home for like the first 12 hours. And then as soon as I was in like, you know, incredible amounts of pain, I drove over the 59th Street Bridge into Manhattan and went into St. Luke's Roosevelt and then labored there for another 10 hours.
Was your birth – did your mom do home births?
She did, yeah.
And is that why you
– Totally. Did,
yeah.
100%. She had all four of us at home and, you know, has videos of it all. Mm-hmm. And that's all I grew up knowing was home births and how magical they are. And, you know, it was never an issue. It was never – I never had a negative thought about you know, freaking out about home birth. Like, it was just always the most normal thing to me.
Yeah. It's interesting. We talk a lot on this podcast. The whole purpose, we reiterate quite often, our listeners know, but the whole purpose of this podcast was to do something where there was no judgment, mm-hmm. how anybody chooses to parent, to be a mama, to bring a child into the world. And, you know, Ellie and I both had natural births, but in this podcast, we are very clear when we talk about any birth that it's important for a woman to do it just the way that she wants to. And that being said, obviously, a birth happens the way that a birth happens. You could choose to have a home birth and you're going to be at the hospital. You could, you know, have a hospital birth and you had your kid in the car on the way.
There's no holier than thou better way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was one of the first one out of all my friends that had a baby. And ever since then, almost all of my friends have had babies and every single situation is different. I was at my sister's home birth, her first home birth, and she is a nurse and had the same experience as me growing up. But halfway through, during one of her contractions, there was a mech in the contraction or in the fluid or whatever. Right. And they raced her to the hospital and she had a perfect, you know, beautiful baby girl in the hospital. Her second one, then again, she tried at home. She had him in the water at home. And my other sister tried for a home birth as well. After 72 hours of labor.
Whoa.
And after 3 epidurals. So she wasn't progressing at home. And, you know, rushed her to the hospital. She had 3 epidurals that didn't take. So she felt all the pain all through the 3 epidurals that didn't take. And then still wasn't progressing. They suctioned 3 times. Baby wasn't coming out. So at the end of all that, she had a C-section. Wow. He was an 11-pound, I think 11-1, 11. He wasn't coming out at all. But yeah, you can plan for these amazing things, these amazing home births, and then baby needs to come out how baby needs to come out. Well, and that's it. Like,
it's such an epic. I remember saying to somebody before I was due that I felt like I was like an astronaut going to space, where it's like no one can prepare you for what it's going to be like.
No.
And so much of the stress is like leading up to, you know, trying to imagine. I remember I had a neighbor who walked by and I met my neighbor because she said, oh, what hospital are you going to give birth at? And I said, oh, I'm doing it at home. And she goes, me too. So we started talking about that. And she goes, oh, my God, it's the worst pain you've ever had in your life. And I was like, I tried to like dive into what her motivation was in telling me that. I was like, either she's trying to psych me out, which is what I told myself, of course. Like, right, it's not that bad.
She wanted to be the home birth on the block.
Fuck your hospital now.
And it was one of, it was the most painful experience that I've ever been through.
And it's different for everyone. And pregnant women who are listening right now, who knows? Like, we forget very quickly how painful it is. Well, I remember saying it was very painful, but honestly, I can't remember. And that's probably why I'll get pregnant again.
And here's what I say about it. I say it is the most painful experience for some people. Most people I've talked to.
Yeah.
Than the women who have an orgasmic birth.
The orgasm. I mean, that really gets me down. I kept thinking with the pushing I did, the orgasm.
Incredible.
I mentioned this.
I'm still waiting for that orgasm.
I literally was we're pushing and pushing for 45 minutes. And I'm like, where is my orgasm? Where is my orgasm? And it was nothing like the videos.
No.
I'm really mad about the orgasm.
Yeah, I can tell.
You can try it on your next one.
Yes.
I mean, at least I did the... You know, you pull out the vibrator to help birth along, right? So that at least I got the.
I hadn't heard about that until you mentioned that.
Oh, so good. And it's like the last time you're going to orgasm for like 6 weeks at least.
Yeah. At least.
So every mom out there, get the vibrator out when you start going into labor because it helps labor progress.
Well, and what I was going to say is that it may be painful, but it's also so doable. Like, I remember thinking afterwards, like, wow, that hurt way more than I expected, but I could do it. In every moment, I was like, I can do this. I can, because as nature provides this kind of safe place for you to give birth, it's allowed us all to have peaks and valleys. So you have a contraction and then it ebbs and flows and you get a break. And I remember saying to my doula in the birth, I was like, when I was at a point where contraction had just gone by, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my God, I want to be here forever. This is euphoric. And that was like when I was not having a contraction was the best I've ever felt in my life. Oh my God.
Not me.
Really?
No, I would have the waves and then I'd feel like a normal person, which I didn't expect. No one had told me that between the contractions, you feel normal.
Yeah.
Like, or I felt, well, you guys felt euphoric. Fuck you. But I felt like a normal person. Yeah. And then I could feel the wave was coming. It's like you, there's like this cloud that's like it starts getting dark and you're like, oh God, the wave's going to pummel me. It's going to pummel me.
You know, it was the craziest thing for me that I will never, ever forget. My midwife, as I was going through it, because you're overcome with pain. Like I was shaking uncontrollably, right? Like you're just in this crazy place. And I kept on saying, I wasn't a very loud screamer, angry birther, but I definitely was more of like a crier. And I kept on saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I couldn't look at my husband because it was almost like he didn't have the strength in his eyes enough. So I looked at my midwife and I looked at my mom, knowing my mom had gone through it, and my midwife. And the one thing she kept on saying, nothing else other than, you're doing it. You're doing it.
This must be doula school because my doula did the same thing. There was one contraction that hit that was so big it took me to my knees. And I looked at her and I was like, I don't think I can do this. And she was like, you are doing it.
You're doing it and your body's doing it.
Yeah.
And honestly, the thing that I love about going through pain because you're like, oh, for those moms out there, really, it's not maybe not that bad. And it's true. It's obviously extremely different for everyone. For me, the reason why I love pain is because it's always a foundational pillar for me next time when I go through something. It's like, oh, I've already done that though.
Yeah.
So I can totally do this. So for me, giving birth, like honestly, when I raced Escape from Alcatraz and when I jumped in that water and was thinking of the sharks and thinking of the craziness of what I'm doing, I thought of giving birth. And I was like, you know what? I've given birth with no drugs. And that was the most insane pain I've ever felt. And I totally got through it. And while my baby was on my chest, still with covered in everything, I looked at my husband and said, let's do this again. Because instantly I forgot. And so when I was doing Escape from Alcatraz, I was like, no, you know what? I've done that and I'm good and I'm strong. And like, if I hadn't have done that, something else would have come along that you go through that brings you to a certain type of depth that you're like, no, I've done that. I can now do this. They're just strength builders. Totally. And I love that.
Yeah. That's what when I had this tumor surgery that I've mentioned in the past, and like I had to relearn how to walk, and it was like a 4-month process, and it was like a really grueling 2 surgeries back to back that were super unexpected and unbelievably painful. And my husband was giving me shots in the stomach every day. It sucked so hard. And because of that and crying and physical therapy and just the sheer, like the pain of it, that the birth was like, oh, this is a positive too. Mm-hmm. This is not a massive bone dissolving tumor. This is good. This pain is good.
And like, something good's going to come from it.
Something great is coming from it. And to know, so that experience before, what you're saying was the foundation of like, oh, I've been there and I can grow from it. Mm-hmm. And now this is the next level.
Mm-hmm. Also for me, I think something that it taught me was, you know, when we get into situations that are really difficult or whether it be emotionally or physically, you know, during the birth, I found that the times that I tensed up and went high with my like, ooh, mm-hmm. like it was hurting, that was when it hurt more. Mm-hmm. And when I would try to breathe down into it and sit in it was the time that it hurt less. And it taught me so much about in life, when we go through situations that make us feel that way, when you try and brace against anything, when you resist what's happening, because life happens and it's going to happen and it's going to happen the way that it, you know, that it's meant to happen. And when we fight that, I went to a meditation retreat one time and I remember this teacher talked about, and it was such a beautiful visual for me of being in the flow of the river. And that if you can imagine laying back with arms spread open and just go with the flow of the water, as opposed to trying to grab onto sticks or rocks or things that could hold you, because then you just, you're held in place and you're beaten down.
Yep.
But when you go with what it is, and I remember trying to visualize that during my labor of like just being there in it.
I kept thinking about like surfing and the idea of this huge wave coming over me, and that if you try and fight the wave, you're just going to get the shit kicked out of you.
Yeah.
And you're going to get pummeled. But if you can just sort of float in it and let it take, you know, take that breath and just like tumble with it.
Yeah.
That you'll get out to the other side.
You know what I think the hardest thing about that visual is you're so vulnerable. When you're open armed, you know, floating down that river, you're so vulnerable because you're open. And all we try and do when we're going through a hard time is protect ourselves from something else, right?
Yeah.
So you're like closed in. And being able to be open and be vulnerable is so hard, but it's so rewarding because that's when you can actually let go.
This is something that we've talked a lot about with this podcast, because it's when you're sharing stories about yourself or you go to places where you are speaking your truth about things, it's hard because normally the people that you're talking to are your friends or your family or people that are in your close inner circle. And this is like you're just kind of projecting it out.
Mm-hmm.
Ellie and I both had a couple moments where afterwards we're like, oh my God. Did I say too much? I mean, it's
– Yeah, we forget that there's like 2,000, 3,000 people listening that we don't know.
And put that in a room and you're like,
I know. Oh, and forever. And that Sabrina Magnolia will find these tapes someday. Listen. Which is also really cool, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, because people ask that too. Like,
yeah.
Oh, what about your children? What are they thinking? Da, da, da. I'm like, well, it's kind of – you know, I'm – if anything ever happens to me, at least she'll have this record of what I went through as
beautiful.
A mother.
But also I think that, you know, there's something to be said about a new kind of generation of people who are opening up about their stories. And I think when we speak our truth and when we tell things like they are for us, first of all, you connect with people, because I feel like if everyone was just honest about what they were going through, we would all be there for each other. We would all get it. We would
especially
all...
as women. Ugh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what? You feel insecure too? Really? Oh my God. That I feel so insecure. And instantly walls are like brought down and connection is built and there's power in that.
Let's talk. I'd love to talk about that a little bit with you. I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted you to come in here, because with your Instagram account and with what you do for a living, you know, you're someone – we had an actress, Teresa Palmer, on, and we had a discussion about you know, that Marianne Williamson quote about people's greatest fear isn't the what is it? God, I know. Blanking out today. Mama brain in full effect. Basically,
your greatest fear is not that you're inadequate,
yes.
But that you're
– Thank you. Look at it. Yes. And
– I always thought it was Nelson Mandela that said that, but then I was wrong.
Well, Marianne Williamson
from
is she's run with it.
Yeah.
But I see sometimes on your
deepest
on your
fear.
Account.
Yeah, it's our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, that we are
powerful beyond
measure.
Yes. And, you know, I've noticed sometimes on your account, because Angie posts these gorgeous – I mean, your body is incredible and you've worked really hard to have this body. But you also have such a healthy attitude about your being, about who you are as a person, about your physical appearance. I mean, and I think that what I love so much about you is you're putting it out there for people to see in a way to inspire. It inspires me every time I see one of your posts. And yet there are those people that come on that comment in your comment section sometimes and are like, well, I don't understand what that has to do with the quote that you just put, or I don't understand, you know, and people – Ellie and I talk about this. There are people that are uncomfortable with – they call it boasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we could just get to a place where we celebrated the things that people should be proud of,
mm-hmm.
What has that experience been like for you? And can you just talk about your intention with
– Yeah, totally. It's been, you know, like you were saying before, we live in this completely new – era, this new generation of wearing our hearts on our sleeve, where it was only a few short years ago where women didn't talk about sex. They didn't talk about anything. Like nobody talked about anything, even with my mom's generation. You know, it's that close and for all of time. So for us to now be wearing our hearts on our sleeve and, like you said, to be wearing them for everyone to see and it being forever on the internet, it's very, very, very hard to find a balance of being true to yourself, having an influence, and knowing what that is. Like, I had probably about 3 years ago now, I had a full social anxiety breakdown, social media breakdown, where I stopped going on Facebook because I would find myself, all I was doing is comparing myself. I wasn't strong enough in who I was to just be like, oh, screw everyone else. This is what I'm doing on a Saturday. I would wake up on a Saturday and look at Facebook, look through the newsfeed. And because I followed a lot of triathletes or a lot of athletes, I would see that they'd already woken up at 4 a.m., done a 5-hour swim, a 2-hour bike ride, and now they're having a little brunch before they go out for their run. And I –
the competitive nature of being an athlete.
Oh, yeah.
On top of social media.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't okay. Like, I just – I'm not that competitive type of a person. I'm more competitive, I think, with myself than with others. And so I would lie there in bed, feel like a complete failure, and cry and, like, not do anything about it. Where – so I had that little bit of a breakdown, and then I found Instagram. I was like, oh, so I don't have to go through everyone else's feed.
You can just post
and I can just kind of have
away.
A platform, yeah, for myself.
Chelsea Handler had a great quote about that. She's like – and I don't know that I'll find the exact quote, but it was basically like, I put up the photo of me throwing up and then I move on. Like, yeah. I don't, like, I just post and go.
Yeah. It's hard when you do something like I'm doing where I'm trying to be motivational and trying to be inspirational. And like you said, oh, there's tons of comments of people that you have to weed through and look through and be like, you know, kind of think about where they're coming from. But I learned probably when I went through that whole letting go, I'm going to call it instead of purging, letting go.
Yeah. Yes.
The process in my life. And it was, you know, I'll be honest, it was a forced process. It was a financial process for me. It wasn't a, oh, I woke up one day, the birds were chirping, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to give away all my possessions. No, it was a very dire, destitute place in my
life. This is when you were giving up your belongings.
Yeah.
That we were talking about
yeah.
earlier.
Yeah. This is just a few years ago where I couldn't pay my rent. And where I had to move out of my apartment and move into a storage unit, and I couldn't afford that storage unit. So I let go of 95% of my stuff because I couldn't afford a storage unit.
Oh my God.
So there's the honesty yes. for that one for all of you people.
For the giving away.
Yeah.
And then did
but
you...
it was the most freeing thing that I've ever done, because in letting go of a lot of that stuff, or like you said, you have 10 things in your closet – I do as well. And it's so freeing because it allows you time to do other important things rather than spend time on picking out your outfit.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, guess what? It actually doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
That's why
what I'm wearing.
Used to love to go up to Seattle and visit my family, because in Seattle, like, everyone wears the same clothes.
Yeah.
Every day. I mean, it's basically, you know, like your boots and your Patagonia jacket. I would go up there, and I had a closet, you know, in my mom's house, and it had like a couple pairs of jeans and two flannels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like,
and those flannels were loved flannels.
They
were probably thin and cozy.
Yes. And I wouldn't pack a bag. And that was so awesome when I would jump on the plane and go up there and know that, like, I didn't have to worry about
yeah.
matching things or packing. And
yeah.
So
I think that brings me back to my point of social media and finding the balance of it, where I'll never be able to please everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, everyone has their own experience. And for me, it's extremely sad. Like, it takes a lot of the anxiety away to know that I can just be me. I'm always going to strive to be a better version of me. But it takes the nervousness away when you know that, like, you have a purpose of being here. I have a voice. I have a story. I have things that I've been through that might help someone else go through something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I have, like, in being me, I am a fitness model. I'm a model. I'm not someone who sits behind a desk, which is a whole, like, they have their whole Instagram that is fine. But for me, I've spent way too many years apologizing for that fact because I didn't want anyone else to feel bad about themselves. But it doesn't help it doesn't help me being me if I just post pictures of me in a hoodie, you know, sitting on the couch and completely covering myself up. But I do always get the backlash of me posting myself, a picture of myself in a bikini. But that's my work. That's
right.
That's what I do. And it's not to gather followers, but it's to say, this is my body now. I used to be a skinny, frail model, but now I'm an athlete, and like these are the comparisons in my body, and that's
right. Well,
that's me. That's my voice.
And I think too, it's like what you said earlier about you can't please everybody, and it's more, I always say, like, Ellie and I, you know, we'll hear back from listeners where someone says, like, wow, this really made me feel like I wasn't alone, mm-hmm. you know, or this was life-changing for me to hear this. And I'm like, if we just have one of those comments or two of those comments, then it's worth mm-hmm. any bit of oversharing that we have to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the same
but as – But we always get the brunt of it, the ones who put themselves out there.
I know.
And it's true hard. That the negative things – always, you know, sting more than the positive ones.
Oh yeah,
are salve, but the negative ones still sting.
But
it's still worth it,
right? It is still worth it. And I'll just share, like, from my childhood. You know, I was a dancer, and I danced semi professionally for this company just outside of Seattle, and I did the Nutcracker every year, and I would dream about playing the lead role of Clara, which in some productions it's called Marie, but for us it was Clara. And I mean, for the year leading up to when my age group was the one that would be selected mm-hmm. from to play Clara, I dreamed about getting this role. Mm-hmm. And I got it. And I remember I was probably 10, 11 years old. I remember seeing the list on the hallway wall.
Oh, totally.
And the elation of, oh my God, I got it. Like, I've dreamed about this and I got it. Mm-hmm. And then there was the fallout. And I missed a little bit of school because I was, you know, in this production, and we did day performances. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, kids at school thought that I was too cool and, oh, she's the lead. And, you know, as a kid, I was boisterous about mm-hmm. the fact that I had gotten mm-hmm. this role. And I remember my mom called it my Clara complex, which was funny but also hurt because – here it was, this thing that I had pined for, and then mm-hmm. I got it, and then it created such, like, these animosities and negative comments mm-hmm. and experiences for mm-hmm. me. And what's happened now is I found that for the first part of my career in Hollywood, I apologized for myself.
Oh, yeah.
And I would always feel like I don't want to step on anyone's toes, mm-hmm. and I don't want anyone to think I'm a diva.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
God forbid.
The Palm Springs episode we did, I put up one selfie, and Bianca had to listen to me for 30 minutes. Be like, do I put this up? I don't know. I feel really weird about putting up this picture of my face because I wasn't making a kooky face. I was just like smiling, and it felt very personal and intimate to be like, oh, this is just a pretty picture that's not forced.
Yeah.
That's like, and that felt intimate to be like,
yeah.
Because it wasn't like, oh, I'm making a wacky face or, mm-hmm.
but you're like, oh. But it's, I mean, I think for me, and especially now having a daughter, I just don't want her to ever apologize for herself.
I totally agree.
To feel like she shouldn't boldly display and proclaim to the world how fantastic she is, because I think she's that fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I understand that sometimes there's people who have egos and maybe are divas and are shitheads. That happens. Yeah. But we've gotten to a place now where I think people are shying away from being the best that they can be because they're worried of the people that are going to post on their
right.
timeline, or they're worried about someone's going to think that I think that I'm great. Who the fuck cares?
No, that's really hard for women to find the balance of that. And again, with social media, where, like you said, it's so much easier to post like a quirky picture of yourself mm-hmm. and, like, you know, you don't have to be apologetic for that. But as soon as you post a pretty picture of yourself, instantly we feel vain.
Right.
Instantly we feel like, oh, what am I trying to get validation, you know,
for my prettiness? And there's always that feeling of like, oh, well, if you own what, you know, that you're an attractive person or something, oh, well, then everything's been handed to her. Or there's something – there's like this –
that's been
– it's like you have to share all the neuroses behind something or the hard work, because otherwise it's just been handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
And like the fear of that. And mm-hmm. it's – I totally feel you, Bianca, about wanting Sabrina not to apologize for who she is. And it's also our responsibility as – on the other side, to weed out the people in your feed that make you feel like shit. If you're looking at other competitors, like if you're in that and you feel like crap looking at their 5 a.m. photos of their morning jog, then we need to take them off. Or like if I have – because it's we're all saying that we need to be able to own what we're doing. But it still triggers us sometimes, right? Like I look at some other people's Instagram and I get really pissed off about it. Okay, like I'll own that. Like, yeah, they can do that and I support that and we're basically like grandstanding about it, being like, yeah, own it. But then I'll see that one person's Instagram and I'll be like really annoyed. So I should just take them off the feed.
It's totally a part of the cleansing too. I do that weekly, monthly. I unfollow people because if it doesn't make you happy and if it doesn't make you a better person, if it triggers something inside of you because you're human and you're not a robot mm-hmm. and you have these insecurities, then just take them off for a minute and like keep on doing what you're doing. But I think that if you surround yourself with key people, because I know like I have a best friend that if I post something and if there's anything kind of off about it, I will literally get a text and be like, so, babe, I love you so much. But I think like I'm accountable to those two or three or handful of people that yeah. know me,
and
that
love me. And what's an example of what she would say? Like how does she say it?
Well, she would just be like, do you think that's – like what are you trying to say with that? Or because yes. my husband will do that like 100%. He'll be so honest with me and be like, you know – I just don't think that's necessary. I think that, you know, there's maybe a different way of showing that mm-hmm. or remember, because I mean, your kids are young, right? Both you guys.
Yeah.
Kids are, so my son is on Instagram and
that's right.
And not only is he on Instagram, his guy friends, his friends are on Instagram. So for me, there's a huge balance of being like, okay, I'm going to post this, but like my son's friends are going to see this. So there's constantly a little voice, a check being like, okay, you know, make sure that you're doing this for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And, but then I have those handful of people who will be very gut honest with me and I'll listen to those people and filter out the rest that have their own issues and don't even know me, you know?
Right. Right. And likewise, it's like if people don't like something that you post that aren't your group of wise friends, then those people should follow someone else. I mean, if that's exactly. if that's something that, you know, offends them or makes them feel uncomfortable in the same way that we'll unfollow people that make us feel that way. Isn't it so interesting? It just this whole new world, right? Because, I mean, none of us had that growing up.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. I mean, I just am terrified about what school and life will be like for our girls. How do you deal with it with Ollie? I know it's different with boys, but like as far as the social media is concerned, is he pretty active on it or is it kind of a one?
He's definitely a boy. But what's interesting, or we were just laughing about this the other day because it was just spring break. And I, you know, my son's an only child right now. And so we were just thinking, On Monday or Tuesday morning, he went back to school and he came upstairs at 5:50 in the morning because he had set his own alarm and it was 5:50. And I was like, what? Like he's an hour before school, so excited to get to school. And I remember that feeling of being excited. But for me, it was an excitement of like, oh, what did everyone else do over spring break? Yeah. Like it was this big, long break. And Oliver literally is on Instagram and he knows exactly what everyone did, like what they had for breakfast.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a whole different thing. You have to be active. I mean, I think it's less, you know, for a boy than for a girl. I would, in my experience right now, because he'll post pictures of him playing hockey or, you know, doing different stuff where girls have a lot kind of.
So do
more
you
to struggle with, but.
Do you follow the people that he follows? I mean, are you that kind of a parent in that?
No, I follow him, obviously.
Do you like secretly look at the people who like his photos?
I absolutely do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you ever find anything on their account where you're like, ooh, that parent. I don't know.
I think because he's still only 11, if he's, if he's 13, 14, you know, or 13, it'll be a different thing.
Right.
But then I hear horror stories from our mutual friend who you did a show with that I'm like,
we won't mention any names, Oliver Hudson.
To be kidding me. He's like, well, you know, he is 11. I'm like, don't even tell me what you did at 11 because I will disown you as a friend.
Listen, the best revenge that ever happened to Oliver Hudson is that he had a daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be sweet.
100%.
Can we talk for a minute about your marriage now and about like what the transition with having a stepdad at home.
That's huge. It's huge. Well, I love being married. I've always loved being married. The second marriage, I feel like I got married as an adult. Like when he proposed to me, I literally, we were on the Ferris wheel at the Santa Monica Pier and he proposed to me up there. It was so cute. But I started crying because I was like, oh my goodness, I feel like a woman. Like I feel like my first marriage, I was this little girl whose mom told her what to wear, you know, walking down the aisle. Like I was playing dress up. And with this second marriage, I feel like I'm this woman who is a teammate who's coming in with her own voice and her own experiences. And it's awesome. It's been really, really great. It's been 6 months. But we, I mean, I've known him for 20 years. I've known him before I got married to my first husband. But the stepdad thing is very interesting. I mean, that's like a whole other show.
Especially with a son.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamic. Alpha males.
Maybe if you guys would both come on.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting. Yeah. I bet people would love to hear that.
It's just so huge because I think there's so many things you go through as a mom. And when you're married, you just automatically put these things on the dad, right? Or on your husband where you're like, you got to pull your weight in the parenting thing and blah, blah. And with a stepdad, I always think twice about like, well, but he's not the dad. So
I've had two stepdads.
To, like, pull his weight. You have?
I've had two stepdads. And yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, luckily, neither one of them. My mother was always the disciplinarian anyway, so we didn't have to even go there.
Right, right.
But that would be interesting. It's a different dynamic. And at 11,
very
that's
different. Yeah.
So what grade is he in?
He's going into 7. He's in 6 right now.
He's in 6th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Man, middle school is so difficult anyway. So many changes.
I mean, yeah.
Hormonally,
luckily, he loves my husband. Like, I don't even exist right now, which I always say, like, I had the first 10 years of his life, like, where his world revolved around me. It was mommy. So now, you know, now if there's a couple years where he's kind of in a daddy phase or like a man phase, he'll come back around.
Yes, he will.
Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, when did you start doing triathlons?
After I got divorced, I started doing tri because I was severely depressed. Yeah. I was a pack-a-day smoker, and I started drinking at 11 a.m., and I couldn't afford therapy anymore, so I got on a bike. Do we want to edit any of that out?
No, you have to keep it. That's exactly what everyone wants to hear.
Yes.
That was my journey to triathlon. It was not a huge – well, it was huge for me. It literally – it probably saved my life because I was on a downward spiral of massive depression because my first marriage ended and it was, you know, when I didn't tell people, I didn't tell my family for a year that we were separated and living in separate places because even when I did tell my family, it was like telling them the moon didn't exist. Like that's,
is that because of the religion or?
It was religion for sure, but we were also so, it seemed to everyone else that we were so good. Because we kind of were, but in a very dysfunctional way. On the outside, we were good. But emotionally, like, there was no depth. There was no connection. There was no chemistry. But we always just kind of made it work.
I feel like
until
that,
it didn't work. And then it didn't work.
I feel like that's more common than people think. I think people have this idea that divorce is this huge explosion and it's some crazy thing happens and it all. But I think more often than not, it's just a slow, a quiet eroding almost. And then you just get to this place where you're like, why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. My now husband also did not tell his family for a year when they were separated. Yeah. And I was like, how? I mean, with my family, I was like, I can't even imagine how I would. I mean, were you basically living a double life?
And how did your son not tell? How old was he?
My son was only 2 and a half.
Okay.
So he doesn't remember anything. But for me, I mean, I didn't tell my family because my family's all in Canada. I'm Canadian. But when they would come down, I think they came down like 2 or 3 times to visit. I literally packed a backpack from my apartment at Park La Brea and went back to my house because
I was
the one that left.
Yeah.
So I packed a backpack, came back to the house. We put on a front for a weekend or however long they were there.
So you were raising your son by yourself
now,
at Park La Brea, or were you guys co-parenting?
We were still co-parenting. Yeah.
And
he's
then,
a great dad.
And then
a
you
really
would
good
co
dad.
and pretend that you still lived there.
Yeah.
That is so difficult. Yeah. I would be smoking a pack a day too.
And
no,
drinking.
For me, I was in such a fog. Like I didn't really know who I was even when I got married because I was 19. You know, mm-hmm. I was a young 19. I wasn't like a sexually aware 16-year-old, you know, going off to war. I was very much a very, very naive, very religious, I would say, 19-year-old virgin who got married. And so when I got separated, it was another version of just this fog that I was in. And with the social anxiety, like, because I had never – I remember going to a party with Aaron by myself for the first time. And I for the first time realized I didn't have anyone's hand to hold on to. Because for so many years, I'd walked mm-hmm. into a room with someone and I didn't know who I was. So
you
after being
beautiful
like a mommy,
gazelle, all of a sudden is single and you've never been single in your life in Los Angeles.
It was brutal.
You needed a bodyguard.
It's weird. Brutal. I remember my first moment walking into – we actually went to Whole Foods and I walked in and I felt like everywhere I looked, it was people shopping together. And I've gone to Whole Foods by myself before. It wasn't like mm-hmm. – but it was the first time shopping just for me. And it was so hard. I mean, I think I cried like halfway through the store. It was just like, this is so depressing. So then you turned to triathlon and how hard was that at first?
Well, it was hard. Obviously, any change is hard, right? Yeah. But for me, it wasn't even me. I have to give all the credit to my friends. I had this one guy friend who he would come around on the nights that I didn't have my son, and he would come and take me for a night ride. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, there was definitely one turning point for me where I was in my house. I was so depressed. Because I was divorced. And it wasn't this sense of like, oh, there's a new beginning around the corner. Like, no, this was the end of my life. I didn't want anybody else. Like, I was a horribly depressed person, negative person. And he came in, literally grabbed the cigarette out of my hand, put it in the ashtray, grabbed my hand and like threw me on the bike and was like, you can cry the entire bike ride, but you're going out. And like, it was that intervention of people in my life because I didn't have the strength to do it on my own. So I had him who kind of took me for bike rides, took me for night rides. And I used to bike a lot with my dad, and my dad passed away when I was 11. So that was a connection for me, kind of a spiritual connection of being like, okay, this is healing because when I'm on my bike, I feel like I'm with my dad. Like it was that kind of a transformation for me. And then my other friend was a professional triathlete. So I literally got all of her hand-me-downs and was able to ride her bike. And, you know, a friend of mine taught me how to swim. I was terrified of water. Like everything about triathlon was an overcoming.
This reminds me of my husband's little sister, Natalie. When she was 24 years old, she was 5 months pregnant, I think 5 or 6 months pregnant. And her husband passed away in a skateboarding accident, just random. He was just playing with a friend and he hit his head and he died. And it was actually on Father's Day and she was pregnant.
Wow.
With their first child. And so she had her son. And then for her grieving and recovery, she did a triathlon that first year. And that's how, like, she gave birth to her son. And then she's trained for this triathlon. She got her baby sister, Haley, who was on the swim team, to teach her how to swim. She got her older sister, Sarah, who's a professional triathlete too, to help her. And she went to D.C. and she did a triathlon that first year. And she talks about it. She's got a memoir about the experience called Signs of Life. And the triathlon's like a great part of it. But what's neat too is her first husband, Josh, who passed away, he had – biked across the country to raise money for charity. So like it's amazing that and my father is a cyclist too and has done it all over the world. And it's such a powerful thing. Like if anyone's never – like anyone who has not gotten on a bike, just try it, even if it's just a class, because it is so therapeutic and it's such a great energy release. And what a beautiful instrument for healing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was therapy for me. Like, I'm not joking when I say I couldn't afford therapy anymore. So when I got on my bike, what you deal with when you push yourself, and I was, you know, riding in the Mulholland and the canyons and a lot of stuff around here.
So scary.
Yeah, it was.
Winding roads.
No, and there's hills and it's so hard. But the therapy that you can give yourself when you push and you don't have an option to give up because you don't have cell phone reception and there's no one to pick you up and you have another hour and a half or 2 hours to ride home, you find out what's inside and what you didn't know that was inside. And for me, the only reason why I quit smoking is because cycling was harder than quitting. Because quitting smoking is hard as a mofo.
I know, and I did it.
Because there's triggers, right? You literally, for me, I had to like get a new lease on a new car because the trigger for me to get into my car and drop my son off at school because of the depression and because of the habitual familiarity, I instantly went to a cigarette.
Yeah.
Until I got a new car to where I could be like, okay, this is a new car. I don't want to ruin that new car smell. But that faded after a month and I started smoking again. So it was the cycling that it was so hard and it like psychologically, emotionally, physically was so hard for me that it was harder than quitting smoking. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. But and it's also a proactive thing versus just a don't do this. It's like a go do this.
Oh yeah.
Like,
because you instantly feel the negative results of smoking. So smoking, which fills up your lungs with tar and makes you, you know, this very, very unhealthy person. When you're doing something that's healthy and outdoors and you're feeling your blood pumping through your veins, I had a chronic cough for probably about 6 months to a year because of just getting rid of those toxins, which I wouldn't have had if I just would have quit and then, you know, done something else.
What has it been like for your relationship with your son, the being a triathlete? I mean, you post pictures as well of you guys training together and you know, I'm sure, especially to have a boy and to be such an active mom, you guys work out together.
Yeah, it's fun. Actually, over spring break too, I have a treadmill in my garage. And for him, he woke up and, you know, saw me working out. And so he, instead of playing Minecraft or, you know, doing something that you would do on spring break, just relaxing, he was like, hey, you know, mom, I'm going to jump on the treadmill and I'm going to do a mile a day, you know, for spring break. And it was nothing that I said or that I asked him to do because I'm not that person. I'm not like, you should work out. I don't care at all. I want him to see by example of me working out and me loving it because just like you were saying about giving birth and the pain of giving birth, but knowing it's a privilege, for me, working out is a privilege.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. Like
and I go every day.
Yeah.
Like with my leg, like 20 years ago, it would have been an automatic amputation. So it's like,
incredible.
I get to do this.
Yeah.
And
if you have that like grateful, thankful thought, that's what so many people on Instagram ask, like, what motivates you? What motivates you? And I'm like, well, my mom got diagnosed, you know, my dad died of cancer. My mom got diagnosed and just fought cancer, just overcame it a couple months ago. My mother-in-law just got breast cancer. Like there's so much in life. There's so many toxins. There's so many things that like I could get hit by a bus tomorrow and break a leg or whatever. What motivates me is that I can.
Yeah.
Like I'm able to. And in most places outside of the United States of America, working out isn't a chore. It's people don't get to work out because what they do for a living is work.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's such a privilege for us to actually go to a gym and take time out of our day where we get to work out. Like it's a joke.
Well, and I think, you know, it's this, I love this, the idea that you just spoke about of gratitude. And I feel like that can affect every walk of your life, every part of life. If you can find a sense of gratitude, and you know, we never saw each other on Hawaii, but we were there.
We were there at the same time.
My brother is a double amputee and he does Ironman in Kona and Angie was there, but we didn't end up crossing paths or maybe we were there at different times. I don't know. It's so beautiful because if you're at that finish line, so the race starts in the morning in between 10 PM to midnight is when the last kind of stragglers.
Midnight's the cutoff.
It's the cutoff.
Within 18 hours.
And you see 80-year-old men and women limping, taking themselves across the line. And what I'm so struck by, you know, in you telling your story and other people that I know that do triathlon, certainly my brother who was in this horrific accident, lost both his legs, and now he does triathlon and he's like a world champion. It's insane. Yeah. Is that it's the stories. It's this that people feel that this push to not only prove something to themselves, but to feel alive. Mm-hmm. And I think that that sense in kind of all of what we're talking about today is to find that place where you're thankful and that you have something to prove, mm-hmm. That you want to give back for the idea of being alive. Mm-hmm. And I wish we had another hour to talk to you, and I hope that you'll come back in and talk to us about so many different things. Cause I love your outlook on life. And I really hope that, any of our listeners who are on Instagram will follow you, because you inspire me every time I see a post of yours. I wish I had the stamina to do all the things that you do. But sometimes it just gets me to the gym for the day, which is more than I can ask for. And
no, what's your website again? It's Angie.
It's AngieGreen.com. But I was just told that nobody can go on it anymore. So I need to change some stuff over so you can go on it.
Well, maybe in the next week.
Yeah, totally.
Because if you're not on Instagram, we still, like, everyone should see all this amazing stuff you've got.
Yeah. Well, Facebook, cool. Like, okay. Everything that I post from Instagram goes right to Twitter and Facebook.
And do you have a particular Facebook page? Do we just look up?
Yeah, Angie Green.
Angie Green.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And anything, I mean, I guess maybe a lasting comment on the moms out there who just feel like they couldn't possibly have the time in the day to take care of themselves. And I know that's a big thing for you about just treating yourself and doing that. So maybe something to inspire them to say whatever.
Well, look, like you said, you know, whatever I post motivates you to get to the gym or motivates you to go over. I, in my season of life right now, I have more time. My son is 11 years old. I don't have 4 kids, you know, and so I do have more time, but some days I only have 20 minutes, and it's a matter of making that commitment to yourself, of seeing it as a privilege but really making a commitment to yourself. Because for me, I call it going to work. I have 5 other jobs that I do, but one of those jobs is making time to either go for a walk, to go for a swim, to do 10 push-ups, like whatever it is, as long as you're doing something every day.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, sitting and meditating for 10 minutes and giving yourself, allowing yourself that space to be connected to yourself. It helps. Every little thing helps. And everyone has their comparisons, right? I compare myself constantly to a professional triathlete, which is so unfair because I don't have 8 hours in a day to train.
Okay, guys.
So everyone has their comparisons.
Yeah, and when you go online and you see Angie and you hear her saying that she compares herself to other people, it's going to make you feel really good because she's a goddess.
Yes!
So everybody's got their
Everyone
shit.
Has their comparisons, up or down. That's what I tell my son all the time.
We'll be back after a quick break. Hey guys, okay, we're gonna finish out with our mom bomb and mom session. Okay, my mom session today is really important to me. My sister-in-law, Sarah Wilson, is an amazing athlete and an amazing mom, and she has a company called Fashletics. She started as a jewelry designer, and she started making charms of kettlebells and inspiring quotes for athletes and CrossFitters, and now she's doing a maternity line of workout tanks. And so everybody, go on Fashletics.com and pick out a maternity shirt for someone you know. I think it'd be a great gift for a baby shower. No, I'm not getting paid for this, but I do hope my sister-in-law will love me even more for sharing. She's got some cute ones. Paleo Bun in the Oven, Due Date Training. That's the one I came up with. And a 9-month partner WOD. WOD stands for Workout of the Day. So if you are into any sort of working out, get one. I want to get pregnant again just so I can wear one of these shirts.
Do it.
And she's going to give Atomic Moms a 15% discount. So if you go on there and you'd like to get one, put Atomic Moms in the little code and you'll get 15% off.
Awesome.
Cute.
Look at us. Okay, my mom bomb, in the spirit of celebrating our guest, Angie Green Fletcher, and in her story about coming from a really hard place and becoming a triathlete and overcoming some vices and depression, you know, and then you see her amazing photos and how inspirational she is. I just want to – this quote is a little overused, but I love it. I think it's a good one, and it's, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Just remember that the next time that you feel judgment or, you know, you find yourself kind of being spiteful towards someone, it's like, we're all in it, you guys. We're all doing the best we can, and we love you, and go on Twitter and Facebook and iTunes and subscribe. And remember, trust in your goodness.
Live out your greatness.
And rock on, Atomic Moms.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. Slicinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.